The following programming is sponsored by Clean and Sober Media. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
If you need immediate help, please call the National Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. Welcome to Clean and Sober Radio, brought to you in part by Recovery Centers of America, the nationally recognized leader in drug and alcohol treatment, using proven evidence-based treatment, including 24/7 medically supervised detox, inpatient and outpatient options. You'll receive exceptional care from an expert team of master-level clinicians, physicians, nurses, and staff using 12-step methodology and medications. Jefferson University Hospitals and Thomas Jefferson University, providing excellent clinical and compassionate care in the Philadelphia region, a proven leader in healthcare and education since 1825, and Acadia Healthcare, with locations on the East Coast. Acadia maintains a standard for excellence in the treatment of behavioral health and addiction concerns. And now, here are your hosts, Gary Hendler and Mark Sigmund.
Hey, thanks for joining us and welcome to the show. Clean and Sober Radio features real people with real stories about addiction to drugs and alcohol. Mark, what's new this week in recovery news?
We got a little bit of disturbing news here. Quasham Rice, age 20, was charged with solicitation of minors to traffic drugs. This is out of Philadelphia. He basically had a whole system of minors dealing drugs throughout Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, in the high schools and the middle schools. Some of the kids that were getting these edibles, which came in the form of Fruity Pebbles bars, brownies, Rice Krispie treats, Rainbow Rice Krispie treats, were THC laced. Kids as young as 11 years old were using them.
Boy, that is absolutely despicable.
It's disturbing.
It is very disturbing.
Yeah.
And so this punk who's doing this stuff, he used to lure these kids, sweet stuff, stuff that looked good, that they'd be attracted to. I wonder if these kids knew that it was, you know, dope and it wasn't really the candy until the effects hit them.
I imagine that some did not. And he had, again, he had kids in the schools that he was supplying to sell them. So you imagine kids were probably playing jokes on other kids and saying, here's a Rice Krispie treat. Yeah. And I mean, can you believe that at the age of 11 years old, some of these kids were getting it?
It's unbelievable. What else you have?
This is crazy. So drug smugglers lost out on a large shipment of cocaine from Colombia. Basically, it was delivered in crates of bananas at supermarkets across the Czech Republic. Workers started discovering powdered filled packages in crates. The total weight of the shipment was 1,851 pounds of cocaine, with an estimated worth of $8.3 million. Nobody knows how this mistake was made. So again, supermarkets across the Czech Republic, they were getting their bananas, and in these crates was cocaine.
So these smugglers were so stupid, they didn't get paid before it was actually then distributed to the supermarkets. Is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, and I'm sure there were some supermarket workers that were very surprised to find all this cocaine in with the bananas.
Well, I think that in the old days, we would have been very,
very
pleased to be in that supermarket.
And I'm sure some of them were. I mean, some of them were. They were on a very boring day and, you know.
Oh, I'm sure of that. Okay, we're going to take our first break. But when we come back, we have a woman who is absolutely incredible, who comes from privilege and then went down the tubes and then has come back incredibly great way to help others and to serve her community. So we'll be right back.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
If you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, Recovery Centers of America can help. RCA's local inpatient and outpatient programs are founded on science and delivered with heart from an expert, caring team who will inspire and guide you every step of the way. Call 1-888-RECOVERY now to speak with a treatment advisor. At RCA, you'll be in a community that builds connections and fosters support from peers and RCA's team of medical professionals and recovery support specialists. At RCA's state-of-the-art campus in Devon, PA, and Mays Landing, New Jersey, they tailor your treatment to you and also offer specialized programs for patients with history of trauma, for patients who have achieved recovery but are experiencing a relapse, for young adults, adults 50 years and older, a confidential program for first responders and military, and a faith-based program. RCA answers the phone and accepts patients 24/7. And because it's local and in-network with insurance providers, treatment is affordable and accessible. Don't wait. Call 1-888-RECOVERY. Recovery today.
Hi, I'm Billy J. Kramer, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We are also heard on radio station KDWN Las Vegas, Nevada, WHFS Tampa, Florida, and WGAC Augusta, Georgia. And we are now live at radio station WWDB in Philadelphia. So our guest is Kathy Spar, and she says Kathy grew up around here. You attended an all girls private school your whole life, and you basically say that, you know, that kind of environment, that kind of privilege, what happened to you wasn't supposed to happen. Kathy, welcome to the show. And what happened to you? Let's hear the story.
What happened? Where to begin? That's always the question, yeah. Right? So I grew up in Newtown Square in Delco.
That's for our listeners. That's the suburbs of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yep. Delco. Sorry, I just had to do that because, you know, Delco's a thing. And I did. I went to an all-girls private school, kindergarten through 12th grade. On the main line of Philadelphia, which is considered the privileged area of the Philadelphia region. And the first time I used it was like, wow, this is the answer to all my problems. This is it right here.
Well, how old were you?
So my real first good drunk,
yeah,
I was 16, and it was amazing. Like, amazing. It was the best time I ever had, literally. Out of all the drunks in my lifetime, that was the best one. Because after that, I was always chasing it.
You know, it's the way you describe that. Kathy's face was lighting up. And for people that aren't alcoholic and aren't addict, a lot of them don't realize, like, that when we first used, I had that thought, this is the answer to all my problems. Like, this is it, you know?
I remember the same thing. You have siblings?
I have a younger brother.
Was there addiction in your family growing up?
Not specifically in my family, but alcoholism runs in the family.
Okay.
So my dad, I would never, ever say that my dad is an alcoholic ever. Did he drink a beer every day? Yeah. You know, do they have a glass of wine at dinner? Sure. But, I mean, life unmanageable? Absolutely not.
Right. So, you know, I guess we all wonder, you really didn't have any of that in your family. I didn't have that in my family. Yet, look what happened to both of us. So, something's going on here. You had it in your family, didn't you?
All over. Yeah. Dad had it all over my family. Not my immediate family. It was, you know, cousins, you know, cousin OD, you know, all that. Yeah.
Yeah, not my immediate family, but supposedly my grandfather, mm-hmm. I've heard my grandmother, some cousins and uncles and stuff like that, but not the immediate family.
You know, I'm sure our listeners, you know, are probably thinking the same thing that I am right now. You talk long enough about your family and you're going to find this in your family.
Absolutely.
Right?
Sure. You absolutely.
Know? Yeah, it's a weird thing. Okay, so Mark and I watched the Euphoric recall as you were explaining your first buzz.
Did you see that?
I do the same thing. You know, it was all good until it wasn't.
It was great until it wasn't.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm the good addict, the good alcoholic who half measures availed us nothing. I went full board there, right? Like, You know, I wasn't the slow moving alcoholic. Mm-hmm. I was the 100 miles an hour off the cliff, right? That's how I rolled. And as soon as I tried pot, I mean, that was weed was even better, right? And I mean, that was like, at least you didn't have to pee every 5 minutes.
And I just want to tell everybody, we're going to tell these stories, but you've been in recovery now for 27 years.
Correct.
That's a lot of one day at a time.
That is a lot of one day at a time.
So go ahead. Yeah. I just want to give a little look back, you know.
Yeah. So, you know, it was went to weed, went to the next thing, which was acid. Loved acid. And, you know, each next try, it was easier to try the next thing, right? So, you know, would I say I had a drug of choice? It was actually probably acid, which is really weird. I realize that. But I'm a cost-effective addict. It was cheap and long-lasting.
Do you think marijuana is a gateway drug?
I do not.
Okay.
I do not. I think actually if there's going to be a gateway drug in today's society, it's actually opioids through prescriptions.
What about alcohol?
I think alcohol is more of a gateway drug than marijuana.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So you're 16. Are you in school at that point?
Oh, yeah.
What privileged school were you in?
Agnes Irwin.
Okay. That's a very privileged school outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
It is. It's down the road from Villanova University, everybody.
Good point. So you're in there. And do you have friends that are doing the same thing? Or are you the one that's when the party ended, you didn't stop?
I did not really have friends doing the same thing. I went and made new friends. Mm-hmm. Right. Work our way around that one, that little problem. Yeah. Make new friends. you know, that we're on the wrong side from the wrong side of the tracks in Wayne, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
Which is also outside of Philadelphia. So I just made new friends because I didn't want to be judged. Right. So you get rid of, push out the people who are going to judge you, bring in the new people who are doing the same thing as you. It was just a progression. There was just the progression there. But it was 100-mile-an-hour progression. So anything, you don't know what that does? Well, I'll figure it out. I'll try it. We'll see what happens. Oh, it's a pill. You don't know what it does? Well, I'll try it. We'll figure it out. We'll see what happens. Went off to college at Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, which is a half hour from Harrisburg, the state capital of Pennsylvania, for the listeners who don't realize that.
I know. We don't need our math.
It's good.
Yeah. Because a lot of people don't realize that Harrisburg is the state capital. They think it's either Pittsburgh or Philadelphia. So little educational piece there.
What was the capital of the United States?
Originally?
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
Very good.
Yeah.
Did you know that?
I sure did.
Did you know democracy was born here in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Democracy could die here?
If you're just joining us, Mark and I are speaking with Kathy Sparr. She's a woman from Pennsylvania, comes from a family of means, but that, as we all know, doesn't mean anything. And she's been in sobriety for a very long time. And when we get to what she's doing today, I think everybody will be quite amazed. And if you want to speak with her or you want to bring up any other points, give us a call at 1-888-329-3306. That's 1-888-329-3306. Go ahead, Kat.
So went off to college and things got really, really bad because then I didn't have to attempt to hide anything. Mm-hmm. I was let loose.
Oh, yeah.
Totally didn't go to class. Totally was busy getting drunk, getting high, getting whatever.
Was your family saying anything?
Oh, they didn't know. They were tucked away in Philly, right? Like that's – and so it was, I could let loose and do what I wanted and – go party all the time and hang out at the frat houses and, you know, free beer and all of that good stuff.
At a certain time, at least my parents, they wanted to see
grades,
graduation, grades, something.
Well, I didn't graduate right away because, like, I was a little distracted by these other extracurricular activities.
Okay.
And so, needless to say, the end of the first semester in college was, like, I think a 1.6 GPA.
Oof.
Yeah.
As long as it was over 2.0, you were I'm all right. But anything under 2.0.
It was bad.
Were you in a sorority?
No. I did not rush a sorority because they didn't party like I did. So
wow. Yeah. Were you blacking out?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the trade secret was to trip on acid so you could drink more. Right?
Did you ever do acid?
I loved acid.
I was afraid.
I loved acid and mushrooms. I mean, I don't want to get into euphoric recall, but yeah.
Are you with me on that then?
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Smart.
And you stay up. The problem with acid, though, is like you would go to sleep and you just could not sleep. Like literally could not.
No. So you just drank.
That was it, or did other stuff.
Right. So needless to say, I was like, well, you know, maybe college isn't for me and I'll just take a couple classes this second semester and see what's happening and I'll move off campus and get an apartment because the RAs were a little bit like, dude, your dorm is like reeking of weed.
Did and you use blow tubes?
Oh, yeah. Blow yeah. tubes. They don't really work when you're...
Blow tubes? What is it?
So blow tubes...
I've been out of this for a while.
Is basically what you would do is you would get like a... Like say a bottle and you'd fill it with fabric softener. Mm-hmm. Okay? And then you would cut the other end off of it and you'd blow through it. Mm-hmm. And then... Supposedly, you couldn't. All the younger generation.
Also, very
is
common to use an empty toilet paper roll.
Our producer,
don't ask me how I know.
Yes. Our producer is very well up on this, also.
And I still got busted by the RA, and you know the whole thing. But you would use these so they wouldn't be able to smell it, and you'd also put a towel under your door, and you'd have the whole
okay.
deal.
Okay, I'd like to know any of our listeners today. Can they relate to anything that Mark is saying right now?
They're like, he's crazy.
1-888-329-3306. I never heard of that.
Oh my God, that's so common. I mean, even the producer knows this.
Yeah, but I got sober in 82.
I mean, they still use them in the bubble, you know.
I guess they didn't have fabric softener in 82.
Actually, they might Sorry. Not have.
Mark, that's a good point.
That's true. Maybe they didn't.
Fabric I mean, this was, you mean the sheets?
The sheets.
The sheets.
And you'd stuff tons of them in there.
Yeah. And, you know, I got to think that, you know, it's kind of one of those crazy addict thinking things that, oh, this is going to cover it up. Just like people think you can't smell alcohol on you when you drink vodka. Right?
Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, I could smell when I would go down the hallway. I could smell just a mixture of fabric softener and pot smoke. I mean,
really?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, if you were a pot smoker yourself, like you knew right away.
I'm feeling so naive right now, and I'm pretty street smart. But you're bringing up stuff I never heard.
Oh yeah, and then we used to get like the Country Time lemonade bottle. Like people would like have competitions who could make the best blow tube.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, and yeah. they'd have like really long ones, like how long can you make it? And yeah.
What? This is all. Yeah, this is like, I feel like an old fuddy-duddy because I don't know what you're talking about. Can we get back to Quaaludes?
All right. Let's go back to it.
Okay, that was before my time. All right, didn't have the opera, well, the pleasure.
Me neither.
Right?
Like, Kathy, go ahead.
So anyway, you know, of course, the second semester didn't go well and I ended up dropping out. And I found a boyfriend who happened to sell drugs. And how better to support your habit than to start selling drugs. Okay. So then it all really went downhill after that. And
what were you selling?
Weed and acid.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So and we thought we had it all figured out. I just want to say for the record, as every addict and alcoholic always thinks they have it figured out, because this is the lie that we tell ourselves. Yeah. He would hold the drugs and I would hold the money, or I would hold the drugs and he would hold the money. We'd never keep both things on us at one time because then it would make us less culpable, I guess, you know? And if one of us got arrested with the drugs, well, then we have the money to bail the other one out, right?
Yeah, makes sense.
I mean, makes sense.
You know what that reminds you of? Can I just tell you something? I was living with this girl. We were selling drugs. We were like on the third floor of an apartment building. But on the fourth floor was our storage locker. So we kept everything on the fourth floor rolled up in carpets in the storage locker. We thought we were so smart.
That's exactly it. So smart.
Until
you weren't.
Until we weren't.
Until you weren't, right. So needless to say, you know, there was a lot of homelessness. There was a lot of moving from house to house. There was, you know, just a lot of insanity until one day, boom, arrested.
Oh. With acid?
No, thank God.
Because the acid.
Yeah, nothing on me. I had nothing on me, but they apparently we had sold drugs to an undercover police officer. And I was charged with conspiracy to sell a scheduled class one narcotic.
How old were you at that point?
20.
So were you still in college or you were out?
No,
really out
that
of
was
it?
That was done.
That was done. So let me ask you a question. So your parents had no idea until you called them you needed money for a lawyer or what happened?
Well, so I did call them and they wanted to bail me out, but I refused to be bailed out because I knew they would make me come home and get rid of the boyfriend.
Hmm. Boy, the choices we made.
Oh, the yeah. choices we made, right? I know.
As you're saying it, it's like, was I crazy?
And this was your future husband in your head, probably.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I opted to stay in jail. So, you know, I mean, I guess on the other side of that, then I got 3 months time served and was sent off to rehab. And I went to rehab, did a month in rehab. And got out and was like, okay, here we go. And my very first meeting that I went to was an AA meeting. I was big book thumped, Bible thumped, and 13 stepped all in the first meeting. It was like, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Hello
That's
to
exactly
AA.
Exactly what it was.
That's, you know.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So.
Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome to AA. Keep coming back.
Okay, so that was your first experience with the police, with the law, right?
That was my first experience with the law. So, yeah, so I didn't stay sober, right? I stayed sober for about 5 months. I wanted to stay sober, if that makes sense, because yeah. I knew it was the right thing. Like, I knew it was the right thing, so I wanted to want this, but I didn't really want it because in my head I was going to turn into, like, some woman who wore like flowered turtlenecks and was like on the side of soccer fields or something. And I was like, I am 20 years old. That is not my future.
Yeah, but you were a rebel at a young age, weren't you? You were incorrigible. You were a rebel. You danced to the beat of a different drum.
Well, I definitely danced to the beat of a different drum.
And these are all compliments coming from me, I'm telling you.
Well, and you know, that old thought, like, I remember when first getting clean, I was like, my life is over,
the beginning.
Right? You know, like over. And you go to the meetings. I mean, I was 21, and I'm looking at these people and I'm like, they're hags. They're like old hags. They have like no teeth in their mouth.
How old were they really?
35.
Yeah,
I know.
They're like 35 and 40, but I'm looking at them and I'm like, that lady lost all her teeth. She is like not a single tooth in her head that's her own. It's a denture. You want me to hang out with her? Are you kidding me? You know, and so when, you know, of course the boyfriend stayed with the boyfriend and, you know, we moved to Hanover, Pennsylvania and made like $5 an hour, whatever minimum wage was back then.
Working where?
It was like some warehouse. Like with a glue gun, I was gluing stuff. Like this is... And I was in a private school, and I'm, like, gluing stuff with a glue gun for minimum wage.
It was a lot of contradictions in your life. I mean, were your parents at that point, like, what is she doing with her life? Were they the type that would try to rescue you or
– I wouldn't say that they really tried to rescue me. I mean, they did hire an attorney to help me with my charges. But I didn't let them try to rescue me.
Oh, you had what would you say? You had not morals. I know you didn't have that. You had some standard of
pride.
Pride. Thank
pride.
You.
Pride. Yes. Pride. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, pride. And it was just like I also didn't want to be controlled, right? Because I knew all the answers.
Yeah, it's insanity, man.
It is insanity.
Right?
And you know when you think back to like what we were thinking. It's like, how were we thinking this? And just some of the stuff, like you mentioned, like taking stuff and not even knowing what it was. like, hey, I'll just experiment and take it. I mean, God, were there any brain cells just communicating for us back then?
Not a one.
So let me ask you, so what was the time period between the first time in prison and then the second time?
It was pretty much close to exactly a year.
Okay.
So I did the rehab, the jail and the rehab, and then I was sober for about 5 months. And when crap hit the fan, I remember specifically sitting with a rolling rock in my hand thinking, do I do this? 10 minutes. Do I do this? And then I thought, can't get any worse. Oh, yeah.
Hold that thought. When we come back, Kathy's going to explain how she got out of this mess, because we can get out of this mess. And so stay tuned. Don't go away. It should be pretty interesting.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Huntington Creek Recovery Center is Eastern Pennsylvania's premier provider of transformative care for individuals whose lives have been impacted by addiction. Our 40-acre campus offers a tranquil, recovery-focused environment. We specialize in evidence-based care that addresses the effects of trauma and offer a unique program specifically for adolescent males. Huntington Creek Recovery Center can help you achieve lasting sobriety. Call us today at 844-948-2320.
Hi, this is Butch Patrick. That's right, TV's Eddie Munster, and everything is better with Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
Hey, welcome back. And if you're just joining us, Mark and I are talking with Kathy Sparr, a woman who had a very tough addiction and has come out of it and is doing great things. And but let's just keep it going a little bit longer in your addiction. So second time in jail, a year after the first time.
So second time in jail, I had relapsed.
On rolling rock beer, right?
After thinking about it for 10 minutes, it can't get any worse. And my, the lies that we tell us when they say you pick up right where you left off, they are not lying. I went from weighing about 125 pounds to 92 pounds in 4 months. I lived out of my car and followed the Grateful Dead, because where better to hide from your parole officer than in a sea of 80,000 dirty hippies? So spring tour, 1995, Grateful Dead, that's where I was, selling grilled cheese and beer and water and soda, because the market was so flooded with drugs, you didn't actually make any money selling drugs. So you were better off selling other things. And we decided that we needed to come back to Pennsylvania. We were in Florida because our very illegal car, which was not registered, had no insurance, needed to be inspected. Come again? Say that again? Why do we need to come back to Pennsylvania? The inspection? Never mind all the other illegal things about the vehicle. But we came back to Pennsylvania, and, you know, the relationship that I was in with this person was very abusive, physically, mentally, and he was always accusing, I'm going to get us sent back to jail. Kathy, you're going to get us sent back to jail. Well, I would just like to point out that he is the one that got us sent back to jail. Okay? Just had to get that little plug in. Still have a little slight chip on my shoulder over that. But speeding in Adams County got us pulled over. And that was the end of the line. And I got to tell you, it was a relief.
That was a violation? Probation violation?
Probation violation. Uh-huh. But when we got pulled over, I knew it was the end of the line right there.
Yeah.
And it was a relief. It was a relief to know I didn't have to look over my shoulder anymore. I didn't have to worry where I was going to get my next meal.
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about where I was going to lay my head at night. I was in a place that was very dark. Mm. I was angry. I was depressed. I was ashamed. I felt guilty. I was embarrassed. I was miserable, and there was no joy. And so, like, when I used to go to sleep, because that was the only reprieve from the insanity that I was living in. That was the only reprieve from the misery that I was experiencing. And so this was the end of the line, and that was a relief. And so I was, like, actually happy when I went back to jail. how bad it was.
Was it the end of the line? Was that it?
That was it.
Let me ask you something. What would you say to somebody who's listening to the show right now, who's in the throes of an addiction and is feeling hopeless, helpless, defeated, depressed, that there's no way out, there's no light at the end of the tunnel? What would you tell them? Because you know that's not true.
We do recover. We do recover. There's always a helping hand. We just might not see it. And sometimes God does for us what we cannot do for ourselves. And that was a God moment for me. He did for me what I could not do for myself, which was stop using, get out of the relationship I was in, and just get me out of that environment.
Because, Kathy, if there's one person listening to you right now and hears your story and says to themselves, look what she went through, look what she's doing now, I can do that too. You've done it. You've given back the ultimate to society.
Everybody can do it. Mm-hmm. I fully believe that. And look, I'll be honest. The second time I went to jail, I wasn't 100% ready. April 17th, 1995 was the last day I used. April 18th, 1995 is my first day sober. It was a very reluctant sober. And in fact, I was like, for the first 4 months I was sitting in jail, I'm plotting and scheming, trying to figure out how to get out so I can go on tour with the Grateful Dead on the West Coast, so I can go to a rainbow gathering, and so I can do peyote because I'd never done peyote.
So why didn't that happen?
So that didn't happen because in the prison I was in, which was Cumberland County out in Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
That's a state prison for less than 2 year sentences. Is that what that is?
Yeah, it's a county prison.
County
yeah.
prison. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep, for less than 2 years. They had a work release program and a outmate trustee program. And to be in that program, you had to have a recovery program. So I was doing Gaudenzia, and because I had to be an outmate trustee, and I didn't have any money. So I wanted, you know, the couple dollars that they paid me to wash the prison, basically. And I went to my counselor and I said, well, look, I just want you to know that I'm here because I have to be, not because I'm going to get sober, because I have all these other things that I need to do. And she said, okay, well, I have 13 years sober and I have a whole lot of, you know, stuff that I still wanted to do too. And I was like, oh, she like totally ruined my plan.
Was that like a defining moment at that point? You still obviously remember her saying that to you.
I do. And I don't think I realized at the time it was a defining moment, right? But I was like, oh, this woman just like totally ruined it, right? That you can get sober and still have reservations. Like she totally ruined that for me. Because I was like under the impression you can't have any reservations if you're going to get sober. Right. So clearly you're not going to be successful if that's the case.
Kathy, Mark and I still talk about, even with all this long term, that sometimes when you're in somebody's house, you still want to look in their medicine cabinet.
Yeah,
right?
Oh, yeah. Sure. Sure.
And that's just you're not using it. Just it's still
it's always there.
It's always
right.
There.
I mean, it's just like when you look at somebody who has that last sip in their beer or their drink. They're a little roly-poly glass, and they're not going to finish it. Well, what do you mean you're not finishing in it?
Yeah. that's right, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, listen, Stan G. from Spindale, North Carolina writes, how many times can you go to rehab? My daughter says you can only go once.
You can go as many times as you want until you get it. Right? And we always talk about, like, it's just so important to keep trying.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think they heard this guy's daughter's trying to say
playing some games.
Playing games, right? Right,
absolutely.
Kat? Right?
Oh, totally.
Leslie H. from Las Vegas, one of our cities that we broadcast from. I cannot get any answers regarding help for my son's addiction. Can you please help me? Well, we say a number each week, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Hotline, which is 1-800-662-HELP. 1-800-662-HELP. You can get help. There is help out there. We always say it. There's no delivery services. There's no drive-thrus, but there are plenty of resources.
Yeah, and get it early. That's what we talk about.
Right?
Get it early. Don't wait till the lowest of low bottoms.
Okay, I have a question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of this, Mark, because of how we go back and forth. to us in the studio or our listeners, what kind of things are you afraid to do now that since you are sober that you used to do stoned? And what kind of things will you do now that you were afraid to do before?
We're all our brains are like,
well, I know, Mark, I know what mine is.
Let's hear it.
I'm afraid of the water now, where I wasn't, the ocean, where I was not before.
Yeah, you know, and we talk about this all the time, and I'm sure there's a lot of other people out there that have phobias of water, but Gary's probably the worst one.
Okay.
He's afraid.
How about you, Kat?
So before I started using, I had no issues with heights at all.
Okay.
I used to be like climb, do ropes courses and all that kind of stuff. No issues.
Yeah.
The idea of like getting on a roller coaster now or being up on a zip line is horrifying to me. Now I've done it. I've done it, but yeah, it's like panic attack.
Yeah.
Time. It just scares me.
Mark, what about you?
So back when I was using, I had no problem with venturing into the worst neighborhoods to try to get stuff, you know, and these, you know, with no thought about it. And I had a couple close calls and I'm terrified of like real bad neighborhoods, especially if it's nighttime and things. It's amazing how you just kind of were going on autopilot back then.
Yeah.
Is there anything now that you do that you wouldn't do while you were using?
That's a great question. You'll have to come back to me on that.
Pass?
I pass.
Take a pass.
I mean, because I did everything. I would just do everything stoned. You know, I would do everything like under the influence. So,
well, how about when you were 9 or 10? You were stoned then, Mark?
I was not. Okay, I was not.
I know. It's an interesting question. You know, Kathy, what about you? I'm with you. Heights, forget it. Open water, forget it.
No, I'm good with open water.
Are you?
Planes?
See, and now that's the height issue, actually. Like, I will not sit in the window seat. I want an aisle seat. I really don't want to look out the window.
So you can get out fast if it's going down?
Well, I hate feeling trapped.
Yeah. You're claustrophobic?
Yes, and I think that's something that is kind of from being in jail, maybe. I don't know.
You know what I was sitting here thinking, which is the craziest thing, is that here Kathy's on tour of the Grateful Dead. She goes to jail. She has all these reservations. Then in August of 95... the big man, Jerry Garcia, passes away.
The big man did die. And you know what? All the guards in the prison loved me. So they all went and collected all of the different magazines and newspaper clippings from it and gave them to me because they knew that was my thing. The big man died. The big man was you know, a higher power for a little while I kind of worked my way through finding that higher power. But let me tell you about the moment that I knew I wanted to stay sober, because that actually happened in jail. And it was after the counselor like blew my bubble on the reservations thing. But this other young girl who was on work release, I was still on outmate trustee. She came back from work and she said, "Hey, I can get acid. Do you want a trip with me?" And I said, "No."
Whoa.
And I have no idea why I said no, except that was the grace of God.
Well, that was,
truly the grace of God. And I was so freaked out by that I actually asked the CO if I could go see my Gaudenzia counselor and tell her about it, because I was so like, I can't believe I just said no. And that was it. That was that moment.
So you were freaked out because you said no. You weren't freaked out that somebody was trying to put you dope on you.
What did she say?
Yeah.
Was she like,
I think she was shocked that I said no. Yeah. I was shocked that I said no. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch the dripping walls of the paint on the concrete walls in prison? I mean, that's like untold hours of entertainment.
Yeah.
Right? But I that was it. I just didn't want to live that way anymore. And I didn't want to be living out of my car, and I didn't want to be spare changing for gas, and I didn't want to not be showering for 3 weeks at a time like I had been when I was on tour with the Grateful Dead. And
what do you mean you're on tour with the Grateful Dead?
I was just following around.
Oh, you were a groupie.
Yeah, I was a groupie. Yeah.
In the parking lot scene, following them from show to show all across the country, right?
Yeah.
Was it dark sometimes on the road following the Dead? I mean.
Yeah. I mean, we were in Philly. We were in Georgia. We were in Alabama. We were in Mississippi, Clearwater, Florida. There was like North Carolina. There was a bunch of shows. Charlotte. Yeah. Yeah. So. I didn't go to a single one, but I have been miracled into a couple shows. So, yeah.
Do you still go to shows?
No, I haven't been to a concert since. The last concert I went to was Rush, the 40-year anniversary tour. Yeah.
Walter N. from New York City. How can I call into the show? Love your podcast. Well, the number's 1-888-329-3306. 1-888-329-3306. I wish we had the cameras in here today, but we're having upgrades with the technical stuff. So next week we'll be filmed again in here.
That's fine. I'm good with no cameras.
You're good with no camera.
Since I was outside for hours before coming here.
Do you still listen to the Dead?
Not very often anymore. I listen to Dave Matthews more than I listen to the Dead now, but no, I don't listen to them very often. But that was the moment when everything changed. So,
okay, let's do this. Can we take an earlier break? Let's take a break. When we come back, Kathy's going to tell us what she's doing these days, which is amazing. So don't go away.
This is Clean and Sober Radio.
A cancer diagnosis can knock the wind out of you. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health can help. Our brand new Asplund Cancer Pavilion brings you 86,000 square feet of cancer-fighting science for truly comprehensive care. Backed by the strength of an NCI-designated cancer center. Call 1-800-JEFF-NOW. The Sidney Kimmel Cancer Center at Abington Jefferson Health. The power to out-science cancer.
Hi, this is Judy Collins, and I listen to Clean and Sober Radio.
888-329-3306. This is Clean and Sober Radio.
We're back with Kathy Sparr and an amazing woman who was in the midst of the depths of her addiction and has come out. We're going to find out what she's doing now. I just want to reiterate, you know, when I asked you if somebody's listening and they were, you know, they feel like there's no way out, you're an example of there is definitely a way out, and you really have come out. So nowadays, you're in long-term sobriety, and you are running for election to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Folks, can you believe this? This woman did two stints in prison, and now she's running for election to the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. You made it through the primary. And now the big vote is November the 8th. And you know what? You're exactly the kind of politician we want because you've been there. You've been in the trenches. You know what it's like. You'll be a friend of the recovery community. So how did you get – I know you got sober. How did you get from there to being interested in running for political office?
So I actually grew up in a household where politics happened. Like my dad was a supervisor for Newtown Township where I grew up. So I was a voter. I'd always been a voter. I grew up doing that. That's what you do, right? You go with mom and dad, whatever. And I never, ever would have thought that this is where I would be. You know, when I got sober, I ended up going back to college. I actually have an associate's degree in criminal justice. I have a bachelor's degree in environmental science. I have a half of a master's degree in environmental science. And I have a full master's degree in geography and planning. Because when I don't know what to do with myself, I go back to school. And it's always about what's the next thing that I can do to improve my life and make my life better and be successful. So right now I work for Delaware County Planning Department. I'm a senior transportation planner. I'm a certified land planner, which is known as AICP. Let me tell you, I love having initials after my name because I don't have the discipline to go after and get a doctorate, but I'm down with having some initials after my name. But when Donald Trump became president.
But we don't get into that.
We don't get into that. All right. But that's what started things for me. So, I mean, again, I always voted, whatever. But I wanted to make sure my kids were going to have a good life and that our planet was going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And people said, I started an organization called Send the Lorax to DC. We decided that people needed to read Dr. Seuss's book, The Lorax, which talks about protecting the environment. And so we were teaching our kids how to lobby Congress by handing them out those books. And people loved it. And then I was asked to come to the Pennsylvania State House and do that with the representatives there. And so we did that there. And they said, oh, you should run for office. You should run for office. And I have a lot of government experience. I worked, in municipal government, working for the county. I know a lot of stuff about how government works, about how laws are passed. And so I said, all right, fine, because there's a lot of stuff that's at issue. We have a lot of people suffering from addiction right now, suffering, and they don't know how to find their way out. And right now it's easier to get drugs than it is to get into rehab, and we need to change that. We have a lot of people suffering from mental health issues. When I had 3 years sober, I'm looking around and I'm like, oh my God, my life is great, but I still want to jump in front of a bus. And my sponsor sent me to see a therapist, and he's like, you know, I think you suffer from depression. So, you know, we need the access. We need the help. And was it the chicken or the egg that came first? The depression. And so the using was like the answer to that. Or was it, you know, the addiction ended up causing depression and chemical imbalances? I don't know, right? I know when I used, I was extremely depressed. And so when I drank, I was like, oh, right. And when I smoked weed, I was like, oh, again, you know. And so I would say likely I was somebody who suffered from depression, and using was how I treated that. So we have a lot of issues out there, and we need to make sure that we're adequately addressing them. I would never advocate for anybody to go to jail to get sober. Certainly that turned out to be a foundation for me. But we need to make sure that when people need help, they're getting the help that they need. And we don't have our insurance companies coming down and saying, oh, you've been in rehab long enough. Time to go. Right. Or if somebody's ready to really is obsessing and has that compulsion and they go back to their rehab because they don't want to use, that they get the help that they need.
See, this is why it's so important for somebody like you to be elected, because you hit all the points. You know, it's treatment, 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 treatment. And you're right. It's easier to get dope than to get into treatment. And somebody like you will be an advocate for us, because you get it. You've been there. It's not like you're just talking bull. You know what I mean? And you're really – you know, I hope our listeners are – you know – what they can get out of this interview is there is hope. We can recover and do incredible things like you.
Beyond our wildest dreams.
Beyond our wildest dreams.
Yeah.
I got one more thing here. I mean, we have time. I just want to read something else. Oh, I already read that. So listen, if you're in trouble and you need help, call the call the Substance Abuse and Mental Hotline at 1-800-662-HELP. And we are talking with Kathy Sparr right now, and she is a prime example of how we were jammed up beyond belief, and we made a decision, whether voluntarily or by the courts, to get help, and we do recover and do great things.
And now now Kathy is, right before the show, she was out doing what's called canvassing.
Yeah.
And she was walking around in the hot weather and knocking on doors.
Talking to voters.
That's determination.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Great.
Let me ask somebody, if you get elected, hope you do, what kind of things are you going to focus on for this community?
For this community, yeah. I want to make sure that we have the resources going into rehab so the beds are there. Like, I want – if somebody wants help, I don't want it to have to be a struggle to get through the door. And yeah. I feel like – there's a lot of red tape, from insurance to not having enough beds, or not having the counselors. You know, the breadth of issues are quite broad. But one of my biggest things is if somebody needs to be in rehab 90 days, they need to be in rehab 90 days.
Yeah.
If they need to be there 6 months, they need to be there 6 months. Why are we letting the insurance companies dictate how someone's recovery is going to go? Because we're spending a whole lot more money with it being a revolving door than we are just doing it right from the beginning.
You know, I've always thought that if the insurance companies won't live up to what you just said, they should not be able to sell insurance in any particular state. Right?
And there's a great act in Pennsylvania called Act 106, which is huge. But it's only for group policies where they can get the time. You know, so things like that, you could really make a big difference, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think insurance companies really kind of clog up the works, so to speak, on recovery for people. And we need to address that. We need to change that because it's not healthcare. It's sick care at that point, right? Like they don't want us to be healthy. They want us to be sick, it seems like.
And, you know, the only way that things really get done, this might sound skewed or jaded, is through politicians. They make the decisions.
Yeah, but I don't really see myself as a politician.
Well, you will be if you get elected.
I hope I'm not.
You'll be a responsible politician.
Yeah.
Right, Mark?
And you know, I see it, you know, I'm a drug and alcohol counselor, and your mind is twisting when you see what you run into as a drug and alcohol therapist, where you have a client in front of you that could easily die, and the insurance companies are denying you the level of care that they need, you know, and they've never met the client, you know, they've never seen them before. And then you think about it, if this was heart disease,
of course,
you'd get as much treatment as you wanted.
Stigma.
Right?
It's
right.
Called stigma.
It's unbelievable. It makes you just want to.
And I got to tell you, the stigma is another thing, right? Like it's another issue. I have had even Democrats say to me, well, how do we know you're going to stay sober? Okay, thank you. So what's the point of getting sober if that's what everybody thinks?
That's a very good point from you. Yeah, listen.
Wow.
It's this. I believe this. If you're not directly affected by addiction, you really don't care. You really don't care until it's in your house.
But who hasn't been affected by addiction at this point? I mean, at the end of the day, we're all the same arm's length from using. You could end up in a car accident and wake up 10 days later addicted to opioids.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going in the right direction as far as understanding addiction and, you know, as far as law enforcement, a lot of different things. It's going in the right direction, but it's slow, man.
Yeah, and you know, when we're talking about 100,000, over 100,000 people dying every year, it's like, and every year it gets worse.
Yeah, nothing's getting better. It's not getting better, right? You're in it.
Well, it's the game changer has been the xylazine and fentanyl. The xylazine's being mixed with the fentanyl.
Uh-huh.
And that's been the game changer of the overdoses. You know, which I don't know what the solution is. It's the synthetic drugs.
Nobody knows the solution.
Yeah, but right? It's every year getting, I mean, and we're seeing big jumps in the amount of deaths. So it's you would have never dreamed because in the early 2000s, I mean, there's still people dying, but you know, what is it, like 15,000? Now we're at like over 100,000.
So what do you think the solution is? Is it not just more beds, it's access to these beds and to know about these beds. You know, you could talk to a lot of doctors. They have no idea of how to get somebody in treatment. None at all.
Yeah, and there's got to be better access to medically assisted treatment because, you know, you run into this where some clients, there's Vivitrol, which is excellent. You know, it's now Trexone is a blocker, an opiate blocker. Yeah. I've had great results on it. You run into a lot of people where their insurance will not cover Vivitrol because it's too expensive.
How about the people, though, the portion of the population in addiction that don't want to get help?
There's definitely
because of their sickness. Because it's mental illness.
I mean, right? that's an issue too, and I think you'll always have that. But
Kensington.
I think for the people who want to get sober, we need to make sure that they can get in the door
easily.
And it's not a battle, and then that they're not kicked out like 2 days later or a week later. You know, we need to provide people with the help that they need, period. And you know, success in recovery is a long-term investment. It's not a 30-day investment. It's a long-term mm-hmm. investment. And we need to make sure that we're prepared to provide those investments, because when we do, then the return on that is huge.
We have a caller on the line right now. Mark, you're there. We have 1 minute, brother.
Hey, Mark.
Okay. Hi, everybody. How you doing?
Okay.
Kathy, great show. And I really enjoy listening. And Brad does deserve a day off. And I'm just calling to say hi. And I would have come in and held the camera, but that's all right. Have a great weekend, guys. Love you all. Talk to you.
We love you too, Mark. Have a great weekend, brother.
He knows you now because he knows everybody in
Philadelphia.
Everybody.
That's amazing.
So you're on his list.
Yeah.
If he donates, that
Mark
would be
Willey.
Great.
He might, okay. Right?
Yeah. Hey, Kathy, thank you so much. Your story's great. We're so happy that your life has turned out the way it has. We hope you get elected. And will you come back on the show? So
absolutely. Mark and I had fun. I mean, there's so much more to talk about. We're not done, right? Yeah.
We're going to do it again.
We could do this for hours.
Absolutely.
We can. Remember, if you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, help is available. Please call 1-800-662-HELP for Clean and Sober Radio. I'm Gary Hendler.
I'm Mark Sigmund.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about this broadcast, please join us on our mission at cleanandsoberbroadcasting.com.
Juvenile cells, I hope we pass the audition.